Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding Westworld, an unofficial recap podcast about the HBO original series Westworld. I am David Chen, and as you no doubt know by now, this podcast is continuing and will be recapping season 4 of Westworld, which is debuting this week on HBO. But Joanna Robinson is not here. She will be recapping Westworld and reviewing Westworld over at The Ringer. However, I'm extremely thrilled to introduce my new co-host for this year. Siddhanth Atlaka is a freelance film critic whose writing has appeared at the New York Times, IGN, Vulture, and IndieWire. Siddhanth, welcome to the co-host chair for Decoding Westworld.
Thank you so much, Dave. As you can all see, I am the new Joanna. I hope to fill her shoes adequately.
Yeah, we are excited. And while Joanna is irreplaceable, I have been a great admirer of Siddhanth's for a long time. I think he is one of the best critics working today. So I'm so thrilled that you have agreed to come with me on this journey. We're going to talk about season 3. We're going to look back at season 3, reflect on it, our overall thoughts on it. And then we're going to talk about where each of the characters are and what the state of play is for them heading into season 4. Of course, we have no idea if any of the predictions we make will be accurate or not, or, you know, like the show could start in an alternate reality and, you know, all this could be irrelevant. We have no idea at the moment we're recording this what the plot of season 4 is going to be. But we are going to try to make a preview here. So, Siddhanth, let's talk about your thoughts on Westworld. You are somebody who has continued to stick with the show despite a lot of ups and downs. Tell us about your overall thoughts on the show and what you like about the show, and then your thoughts on season 3.
Well, Westworld is a show that has had me hooked since the beginning, but I think we need to consider that a value-neutral statement. Because what keeps me coming back to it is the ideas. It has one great idea after the next, one amazing idea after another. Whether or not it fully delivers on those ideas, it depends on the week. It depends. But there's always something interesting happening. It's very hard sci-fi. It's very good sci-fi. It's very often not so great drama. It's brilliantly assembled. The music is incredible. The visual effects are stellar. The scene to scene construction is weird. So there's a lot to say about it, and I have enjoyed how it began as in a way, a spin-off, a remake, an expansion of the original film, with a whole bunch of new concepts thrown in, and then it, you know, kept expanding until it started taking place in, you know, the real world, our future. Where's it going to take place next in season 4? If the trailer is anything to go by, maybe in like a Mad Max type of, you know, desert apocalypse scenario. And also some high rises. I guess we'll find out what's next for Westworld.
Yeah. So I spent a significant amount of time rewatching season 3 this last week. I didn't rewatch all of season 3, but I kind of like rewatched the premiere and rewatched the finale and rewatched like a bunch of the highlights. I think you're right that this is definitely like a show of ideas, you know? And to a fault, I would say, is the problem, is because it introduces so many ideas. It's brimming with ideas. And there's so many shows that are bereft of ideas, you know, like there's so many shows that don't have any ideas at all, really. And so I don't want to fault the show, but I have to, because you put it really well. Like, the ideas are great. The drama is not as great. You know, often the drama feels inert as a result of how many ideas there are. But let's just talk about season 3, like overall, like the arc of season 3 overall, and the main ideas there. First of all, like, big swing to take the show out of the park, period, right? Like, and again, you know, you got to admire the chutzpah. You got to admire the boldness to, like, take the show out of the park and do something wild and different with the show this season. Introduce, like, a new central character, Caleb Nichols, played by Aaron Paul. And so I admire the ambition. And there's a whole theme and thread throughout the season of humans being controlled by machines in this. You know, it's the other way around now. It's not humans controlling machines. It's machines controlling humans now. And that's an interesting idea, but it throws in so many other ideas on top of that one that most of the season just became thinly establishing a reality and then pulling the rug out from under you. It's like, you think it's this way, but no, it's not. And then you think it's this way and no, it's not. You know, like that, I felt like that was, the show was just an endless series of those kind of reveals throughout season three. But the central idea I did like, you know, which is that is very Gattaca-esque. You ever see Gattaca, right?
I did not.
This idea that your fate is programmed from birth, right? Mm-hmm. It's and by the way, amazing film, Gattaca. You should totally watch. But like, there's this machine, Rehoboam, that is theoretically there to restore peace to humanity, and it dictates what everyone should do and the stations in life you should occupy. A lot of Matrix-esque vibes as well, in addition to Gattaca, this idea like we're all being controlled by these machines and like you can never, you need to break free. You need to have choice. You need to have freedom. Choice, a big part of both franchises. And so I like that idea, but there's just so much other stuff on top of it that kind of obscures it. There's I'll just bring up one more example. I'm bringing up a ton of pop culture examples, but like, Alex Garland's Devs on Hulu, which was, I think it was like 6 to 8 episodes, and it was just the idea of a Rehoboam-like machine. And that's, that was the whole show, was just that one idea and like one plot point, basically, and that's it, right? And you know, there's a lot of positives and negatives to Devs. Well, there's actually a couple ideas. There's another big idea along those lines, but like it's like two ideas. Westworld Season 3 is like 15 ideas. You know, it's like there's a machine that's controlling everyone, and what is free will, and Dolores has implanted herself into 4 different people, and what does that even mean? What does it mean to fracture yourself like that? And then Caleb, who's like has all this trauma from what he's done, but they actually wiped his memories, it turns out, and if they wipe your memories, are you really the same person, you know? And so it's like all these ideas that I just don't think are given enough time to breathe.
In a lot of ways, Westworld Season 3 is several of the best movies from 1999. You've got The Matrix thrown in, you've got Fight Club thrown in, and various different parts of them coming together. But before I was rewatching some of Season 3, I was thinking back to it about how much I loved the Rehoboam idea, and how much I loved, well, not just the idea of an artificial intelligence that, you know, in a way takes after the predictive algorithms we already have, you know, in terms of how we categorize people and try and sell and advertise to them. But I especially love the idea of, you know, Rehoboam being in Serac's ear, the Vincent Cassel character.
Yes.
And how he's essentially not just acting on the orders of an AI, but almost one and the same with him, saying exactly what he's told to say. But then I watched the season 3 finale again, and I realized, wait a second, that isn't revealed to us until like the last 15 minutes of the season.
Yes. And that's a great point, because it's like it's such a massive reveal, but you have no time to think about what the implications of that are. You know, like, and it's like, what does that even mean that he's been controlled the entire time? Of course, there's like 8 reveals in the season finale. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah.
It blunts the impact. Anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay. No, we're on the same page here, because so much of the season is about, you know, this intended narrative sleight of hand. Like, oh, well, you thought this character was doing thing A, but they're actually doing thing B. But in the process, what they do in between, you know, establishing where they begin and like revealing where they end up, it's all so vague and, you know, faux mysterious, that it's hard to follow it from a dramatic standpoint. Because on one hand, if you're given certain information up front, you understand where the characters are coming from. You understand their motivations better. But then when you leave that information until like the last few minutes of the season, you just kind of have to follow them passively and then think to yourself, oh, okay, I guess all of what they did makes sense in retrospect, just for the sake of a reveal, you know, rather than having emotional investment.
And that's what the show has become. It's like become so obsessed with these reveals, I think, you know. It's obsessed with like tricking the audience or being ahead of the audience that it's almost to the point of parody. At the same time, but by the way, the reveal that Vincent Cassell's character has Rehoboam speaking to him, it's very similar to another low budget sci-fi movie that came out in the last 5-10 years. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to reveal it because it's a spoiler for that film. But at the end of this sci-fi film from a very well-regarded horror sci-fi director, it's revealed like, oh, the thing was giving the orders the entire time. I like the idea of this Rehoboam as a concept too, right? There's so much interesting stuff there. The idea that a lot of this data that this Rehoboam machine has on us is data that was surrendered willingly, right? No, I think he technically bought it from Serac is trying to get the Westworld data, and that data was surrendered willingly because people went to the park. But the idea that like some of the data they're trying to get for Rehoboam is like given willingly from people, which is like we give data up all the time to major tech companies, and that's an interesting idea. And predictive algorithms, and can you ever overcome them? And you know, there's tons of like interesting stuff, and so it's just about, can you take those interesting ideas? Can you focus down on like just a handful, like 1 to 3, and make that the focus of your entire season? We will see. So I want to talk, I'll just talk a little bit about the things I really liked about season 3, right? You already talked about a lot of it, which is like the performances are great. The production values are great. There's some genuinely cool moments. I love the look of the outside world in Westworld, right? Like beyond the park, it looks like a sci-fi city, and there's flying cars and there's security robots and mechs and droids and stuff like that. And all that stuff is pretty cool. So I enjoy all of that. And of course, Evan Rachel Wood, I think, is just tremendous as Dolores. I think she's just been, the role demands so much of her. She needs to be a badass. She needs to kick ass. She also needs to be vulnerable. She's turning on a dime often, like within one scene, she's changing her complete emotional state. It's incredible. But on the flip side, we've already talked about how there's too many ideas. There's too many twists. There's just tons of exposition. People talk in riddles. Like by the end of the show, people are just speaking in riddles, you know? A character like Caleb will say, so wait, I am the chosen one? And then someone will say, you're not the chosen one. You're the only one. You know, it'll be like something like that. And it's just like, okay, you know, at some point you should just say what you mean, you know, like just, I just want to understand what's going on.
At one point, somebody gives someone a briefcase to give to someone else. And he's like, give it to him. And then you see Clifton Collins Jr. handing Bernard the briefcase and is like, go see her. And then he goes and, you know, sees Arnold's wife, I believe. And it's a beautiful scene, but
incredible.
Do we need all of that, you know, mystery, sleight of hand stuff?
Right. What was that? So that was another copy of Dolores in Clifton Collins Jr.'s body, right?
Yeah.
What was she/he doing this whole season? Like, what were they up to?
Chilling.
Yeah, just chilling. I think. I don't think you've seen that person until that episode, if I recall correctly. But
yeah, because look, if you have, you know, two Dolori driving the action, you need a third one just vibing in the background, you know, just biding their time.
Indeed. I think the other issue with the show that it's really running up against is that death often has no meaning on the show, you know?
Yes.
Because we've seen characters die and people die and then they come back and they're revived somehow. And it's like, it makes it hard to feel like there's stakes. James Marsden's character who died in season 2 is apparently going to be a character in season 4. Like, I'm like, okay, don't know how they're going to explain that one. You know? I really feel like it feels very comic book like, but I don't think the show has the necessary foundation to kind of make death meaningless in that way. You know what I mean? I don't know.
It's becoming sort of halfway between a traditional ensemble drama and an anthology series where you have the same cast playing entirely different people, but you also have them playing the same people. And, you know, in some ways you need that. Some ways, you know, it makes sense. Like, you know, you have Bernard being a copy of Arnold and so forth. But then after a while, it's just, oh, let's just bring back some familiar faces, make them play different people, make Dolores, you know, everyone. And I like the way they explore it with Charlotte, with Tessa Thompson. But then are they really going to do anything with, you know, all the other Doloreses? Who's to say? The showrunners are to say, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think I would be more willing to like roll with it if the show had a more fun or campy tone. Do you know what I mean? But I feel like the show takes itself deathly seriously, you know? And that's a problem when you're dealing with like some issues and plot developments and situations that are occasionally just extremely silly, you know?
Yeah, and that clash also, it manifests in a weird way when you have something like season three, where again, you have all these ideas and, you know, in order for the larger plot to play out the way it does, you know, the various revelations about the data and then devolving into riots and sword fights, for all that to happen, you need most of these characters to be switching motivations and allegiances throughout. Like, you know, all right, Maeve is fighting Dolores now, but they're on the same side because Dolores read her a poem or something. She didn't actually, but she may as well have, you know, talking about human beauty and like, you know, her motivations change as well. And if I think it needs to at some point admit that it is a plot focused, you know, action focused show more than a character focused one, because the more it hides in the body of a character focused show, the more it puts that front and center in this very scatterbrained way, it just falls apart, because you end up requiring all these scenes of characters, like you said, just delivering exposition about their motivations in order to justify the next change in status quo.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the specific ideas that have been put forward. And again, every one of these ideas is super cool, and I love that the show is even experimenting in this space. But you just mentioned Dolores. The idea of replicating a personality and placing it in different bodies, right? Of course, there's some like racial politics there that the show, I think, just is completely uninterested in. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the show is kind of in a post-racial society, almost, thinks of itself as post-racial, you know, because I don't think it at all addresses the idea of like, what is it like for a white woman to be in a black woman's body or a Asian man's body or whatever, you know, like, I don't think it like is at all concerned with exploring that in any way.
Yeah.
But what it is concerned with exploring is the idea of, if you take a single personality and put it in a different environment, in a different body, can that personality change? If that person experiences different things, can it become a different person? And the show is saying definitively yes, because at the end we have the Charlotte Hale version of Dolores, a.k.a. Haloris, which is what I will call her from now on, right? Or Charloris, whatever you prefer. Pick your poison. You have Charloris, who is now like dead set, like she wants to destroy Dolores because like Dolores has taken away her entire actions that Dolores is engaged in have like directly or indirectly taken away Charloris's family, right? Her whole family got blowed up in season three. And so Charloris is like, you know, now I'm going to lead the robot uprising. And so I like that. That's a really cool idea. And it was kind of a fun reveal. On the one hand, it was anger-inducing, but looking back on it, it's like, oh, that's kind of cool. You kept us guessing about which personalities would be in which bodies, but at the end of the day, it's like, oh, it's all the same person. That was a cool reveal. But that's just an example of like a specific idea that's like kind of interesting that the show, I think, doesn't really do that much with beyond the plot, right? And beyond people saying, like, intoning all these weird-ass pronouncements about what it means to start from the same place and end somewhere different, you know?
Yeah, and in season three, I believe there was also, I can't remember if it was Charlotte or Clementine, which character, a character who has, you know, now essentially Dolores in a different body, and there's like this element of self-harm, I believe, at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, the way the Charlotte storyline plays out, it almost touches on this idea of bodily dysphoria, the mind-body disconnect, and I think even, knowingly or unknowingly, Tessa Thompson's performance plays into that a little bit. It's not something the show seems particularly interested in exploring beyond its plot function.
And that, again,
just ties into here are all these grand sci-fi ideas that all eventually function in service of twists.
Right, because there's very little time when... I mean, it takes several episodes, I believe, for you to even know that it is Dolores in each one of these bodies. And then by then, it's like for them to kind of set up stakes and make it so that you understand more about Charloris's mental state. It's tough. I mean, you get the broad strokes, but you don't really get anything much deeper, in my opinion. Another concept that I think is really cool is like the Caleb storyline. The idea is Caleb was an outlier. And what was really interesting is Rehoboam used outliers like Caleb to hunt other outliers, which is a thing that governments have done in the past. They have used the oppressed to hunt and control the oppressed, right? And that's like a really compelling idea. But again, you don't find out that that's the case until I think episode 7. And so most of the time, you don't know what you're watching. Like, you don't know what's happening. And that is to the show's detriment, because as a viewer, I'm spending most of the time trying to figure out what's going on rather than experiencing it on an emotional level. Do you have any thoughts on Caleb's storyline?
Not more than what you just said, because, again, I think Caleb, looking back in retrospect, is an incredibly interesting character, given where he is at currently. But there are so many things that happened to him along the way that I think, oh, any one of these could have made, such an interesting season-long arc, or even an episode-long arc, rather than just like an isolated concept. Like, he takes this drug called genre, which changes the kind of genre he sees himself in, whether it's action or romance. But that's, again, it's a very fleeting concept. Like, it feels like, I don't pretend to know, what the writer's room is like, but it just seems like, somebody had an idea one day and they, pasted it to a wall and said, we'll do this. We won't expand on it, but we'll use it somewhere.
Yeah.
And, similarly, the Rico app that they use, which first appears, as Death Grips blares through the soundtrack, which was very much for me. That, again, it's, having the Uber of crime, so to speak, is just a way to get him into Dolores's orbit,
right?
Rather than to, really
the implications of the idea of a Rico app are not fully explored, right?
Yes, and
which itself, the existence of this app would like upend the social order in like multiple ways, right?
But
go ahead.
It very rarely comes back. Like it maybe comes back right at the end in a semi-meaningful way where, Dolores is now, hiring people to escort Caleb around and call him sir, like he's Tyler Durden. But could I jump back to season one for a second?
Please.
Not like for an extended tangent.
Yeah, sure. But I'll just say before you do that,
sure,
that one of my biggest issues with that Rico / GTA style app is that the show points out, which is, the problem with the app is that there's a fatal flaw with that app, Siddhanth, which is people can hire, if you're going doing a crime spree with other people, then the person will just offer one of those people like $2 million to kill the people you went on the crime spree with. And that happens like multiple times, I think, or, it's like, yeah, I'll offer you $2 million to kill the other guy. And it's like, you would think that would happen for every single crime because they want no loose ends. So,
pretty much.
So the lesson of Westworld season 3 is, do not use any app like Rico, because they're just going to kill you off Joker style from the crime scene before you've even left. Anyway, take us back to season 1, Siddhan.
Midway through season 1, there's this incredibly interesting scene where you see this in the park, she's a host, this young native girl holding a statue she seems to have carved, with like these, you know, these big eyes. And the implication is that somewhere in her subconscious, right, maybe, you know, because these characters keep dying and they're, you know, rebooted yeah. by these Westworld workers in like these big hazmat suits with, you know, giant lights on top that look like eyes.
Yeah.
That somewhere in her subconscious, she, you know, retains this memory, right? That's the implication.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating to think that she is giving this memory physical form, almost like it's an idol to be worshipped. Mm-hmm. And what you're witnessing is almost like the birth of something pseudo-religious. But what it turns out to be is just another clue to like these hazmat suit dudes are, you know, running around the park at night and rebooting hosts. And, you know, some of the robots might remember them. And then that really just drives Maeve's plot forward, you know, in terms of, you know, figuring out a way to like, you know, hold on to those memories. And that's fine. That's good. But the implications of something like that, the implications of the stain of these powerful memories and how they manifest is just completely glossed over in favor of, you know, plot momentum. And yeah. that's when I first realized, oh no, this show, oh no.
Well, that was when you realized it? Interesting.
For you, was it earlier or later?
I think season two is when the show really went off the rails. Like,
yeah, okay.
Season one had some big twists, but like, I actually think season one overall was very, very strong. You know, like,
I agree.
Overall, like, season one was a great season of television, and there was a bunch of twists, but it wasn't out of control. Whereas season two was just, they're introducing so many concepts like robot heaven, other kinds of parks, like all this stuff. And season three, I don't know if I would say kept roughly the same pace in terms of plot twists and reveals.
Just to clarify what I was saying. My oh no was at the fact that it gave me an idea that I loved. I was thrilled by that idea because it ends an episode. And so for a week, I'm sitting there like, let's do this, man. Let's see how robots find religion.
Yes. And, yes.
Maybe that's on me for misinterpreting it. I don't know. But gosh, what powerful imagery to do nothing with.
Right. Because I think you're the idea of like, oh, like some robots remember seeing these lights or whatever, and they could form a religion around it. And like, maybe the show can be an exploration of how religions form even amongst the AI and stuff like, you know, like there's so many ways you could go with that. But I think again, the show has always been super plot driven. So.
Yeah. And then you skip forward a couple of seasons and then you have a similar setup. This line between AI and religion with Rehoboam, who's essentially a god.
Yeah.
You know, almost omnipotent and, you know, directing the main antagonist. And you don't find that out until the very end.
Yeah. And then there's all these ideas of like free will. You know, that's really fundamentally what is at stake. Free will. If you know what the machine thinks your future is, can you change it? Minority Report style kind of stuff. Right. And
yeah,
all very interesting, but just a lot of stuff going on. Anyway. We're going to get into the specific plot details of season three. We're going to talk about where each character is, what we're thinking of, slash looking forward to, slash wondering for season four. Before we get to that, though, I do want to just give a plug for some of the other stuff that we're doing on the internet. Siddharth, you want to tell people where they can find some of your other work on the internet?
Sure. I'm writing at a bunch of places right now, all of which I share to my Twitter, which is at Siddhant Adlakha. That's SiddhantAdlakha. And one of the main things I'm working on right now is weekly Miss Marvel reviews for Vulture or New York Magazine. And it is one of the rare Marvel things that I'm really, 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 really enjoying. So
excellent.
Feel free to join in. Yeah.
Awesome. Check out those recaps over at Vulture and be sure to follow Siddhant on Twitter. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, SKY. And also check out my podcast, Culturally Relevant, at culturallyrelevantshow.com. It's another show that I do. Also, if you want to support this podcast, Very easy to do that by going to patreon.com/DaveChen. I consider those supporters the people who are basically funding this podcast this season. Thanks so much to the folks at patreon.com/DaveChen. If you're enjoying this chat or future chats and you want to support the podcast, patreon.com/DaveChen. Okay. Let's get to where each character is now. There was an article over at consequence.net that ran down each one of these characters. I may quote from it. So if you, they wrote an article, by Guy Dolby, get ready for season four by remembering who lives and who didn't in season three. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about each character. So Maeve, if you'll recall, Maeve, was acting on behalf of Serac, all of season three, until the very end when, as you said, Dolores read her a poem and then she's like, okay, I changed my mind. I'm going to fight for the robots instead.
Right? And then she uses her Wi-Fi Jedi powers.
Was that your interpretation at the end of like how she... it wasn't super clear, I forget. Like, how did she overcome Serac's, you know, kill switch? Do you recall that?
I assume that it goes back to one of the earlier seasons where she gets her, you know, abilities and stats turned up in the back end. And so she can, you know, communicate and, you know, control other hosts and such just because of her internal mechanisms. But ends up looking a lot like a Jedi, which I think is cool.
It wasn't clear to me if it was Maeve doing it or Dolores doing it because she'd been uploaded to Rehoboam already. You know, like maybe she was destroy the switch. Anyway, I don't think they ever really explain it.
No.
But anyway, she theoretically kills Serac. And I think Serac is dead, is my sense from season three.
I'm not sure. I don't really know, because isn't he like...
He is at the very least grievously injured, right? I don't think we see him like actually. We don't see him actually expire, from what I recall. but I think he's like bleeding out and not in a good state as of the end of season three. So then she basically teams up with Caleb and is like, you know what? I am going to see my daughter again. And she does have that really cool line where she says, you know, out here you can be whatever the fuck you want, which is a callback to season one. And instead of the robots breaking free, it's the humans breaking free in season three. And so that's a cool parallelism that the show has, right?
So Beyond the Walking Dead. Oh, yeah, wrong so show. She, sorry.
She is joining with Caleb to lead the humans in season four, I guess, ? Any thoughts on Maeve before we move on to the next character?
It's hard to have too many thoughts on Maeve post season three, just because so much of what she's doing is outside of her own agency.
Exactly.
She is, you know, I thought it was really cool when she was, you know, in an artificial reality within an artificial reality and ends up...
Yeah, that was super cool. That was like really cool idea of this server or machine that's like running her reality. I like that a lot. Yeah.
And then, you know, she basically makes it break through too many logical inconsistencies or something and, you know, ends up escaping in, if I recall, like the body of this like Chappie-esque robot, and it's really cool.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, but by the end, and despite having rewatched the season three finale just hours ago, I'm not entirely sure what her deal is when it comes to I want to see my daughter. Oh, I guess I'll see her eventually. I don't know.
Well, I think the journey there is that she was willing to give up seeing her daughter because killing Serac, like Serac promised her a trip to the Sublime or whatever, and she could see her daughter, and, you know, she was willing to give that up to help Caleb out. And I guess that's the journey, is, you know, she's at peace with that idea that like she's going to figure it out somehow. But yes, I would agree with you. Not a super compelling season three journey for Maeve, unfortunately.
Yeah. Would have loved to have seen her coming to terms with it, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
In a dramatic sense.
What you just said could be described all the characters I'm about to talk about, you know? So
let's do it.
I would love to see them come to terms with it. That's just a blanket true statement for the show.
Yeah. And before we move on to the rest of the list, I don't think the list is going to mention the fact that Rehoboam is dead. Rest in peace, King. but let me just say before we move on, I'm really, really going to miss those light, eerie notes of Raman Jawadi's score whenever we are, you know, in Rehoboam or Rehoboam is being talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to miss that in season four. Anyway, let's continue.
I do think the visual motif of like divergences and, you know, that Sirach had it on his watch of like, you could see whenever divergences, that's like a cool idea that's brought to life really vividly and effectively. So, all right, let's talk about Holoris, right? So Dolores in Charlotte Hale's body eventually grew disillusioned with Charlotte Hale towards the end of season three and like actively was working against her. At one point, she even figures out a way to freeze Dolores's body, I think. I don't think that was ever explained how that happened, but like,
there's an extra Dolores lying around.
Yeah, but also, Siddhant, that was their whole plan all along, you know?
Of course it was. Yeah.
For Dolores to get interfaced with Rehoboam and delete Rehoboam. Anyway, at the end of season three, post-credit sequence, we see that Holoris is in Delos and she has tons of like machines that are fabricating hosts. To what ends, we are not clear. Maybe to create a robot uprising slash takeover. And she also creates a duplicate of the Man in Black, a.k.a. William, who then ends up murdering the real William in rather brutal fashion. Unclear exactly why she did that, but apparently William is going to be key to whatever her next steps are. Also, it's a fun way to keep Ed Harris in the show because it's very possible there's going to be a massive time jump this season. Who knows what's actually going to happen, but yeah.
Are we talking about things that we've glimpsed in the season four trailer?
I mean, I guess you can. You can talk about the teaser, right? So, yeah. What is on your mind from the teaser?
Like you said, good way to keep Ed Harris in the show. You know, having his host version, live on. But I'm also unclear as to whether or not the real William dies, because there's stuff that's in the trailers for the new one that makes me think. Wait, is he? Is he still around after getting his throat slashed? Because you don't actually see him like die. You don't see the life leave his eyes, and it's a post-credit scene. So, man, it's gonna be interesting.
We're gonna find out. Open season four. It was all a hologram. What we just saw,
wasn't it? Yeah.
But you know, it's very possible that she's imbued host version of William with characteristics of real life William, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, but who knows? Who knows? So the question of, I think the big question for me is, what time frame does season four take place in? And I'll get to that in a moment. But suffice to say, William is dead. Probably there is a host version of William that is going to team up with Hey Loris, and they are up to nefarious ends.
Shaloris.
Shaloris. Caleb Nichols. He was a hitman on behalf of Rehoboam / Solomon, and he helped to take out outliers, and he took these drugs that kept him sedated and so on. And then at the end of season three was chosen to be head of the robot, the human uprising. He's going to be the leader of all mankind after the ashes, after the ashes of society have been risen from. He and Maeve kind of team up at the end of season three, right? So, any thoughts on Caleb as a character, Caleb's storyline, season three? Any thoughts on that?
Once again, incredibly interesting in spurts.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't help but wonder, does he need to be the leader of all humankind, all human resistances? I guess that's maybe a question the next season could ask too. You know, how does he deal with being, you know, shouldered with this responsibility? So I think he might be the character who I'm most interested to revisit. You know, not to sound like I have an anti-host bias, but it is, you know, unfortunately the one human character who I'm gravitating towards. I think his stuff is probably the most clear from a dramatic standpoint, you know, in terms of what his whole deal is. Okay, he's been controlled all his life. He has an opportunity to fight back against the system. But does that mean, you know, going from not just obscurity, but a path of, you know, potentially offing himself in 10 years' time, going from that path to leading humanity into the light? What is that going to do to him psychologically, I wonder? And I wonder, you know, are we going to go far enough in this time jump now or at some point where we might hit that 10-year mark and, you know, we might have him wonder, like, you know, how destined am I for what Rehoboam predicted?
Yeah. I think we've seen this kind of hero's journey many times of a character who's like, I'm just a normal guy. I can't possibly blah, blah, blah. And it's hard to make that journey super interesting.
Yeah.
And movies like The Matrix can do it with just an incredible fusion of all these different styles and elements from other films. And same thing. I could say the same thing for Star Wars as well. You know, Luke Skywalker having that journey. The problem with a character like Caleb is, again, what we've already alluded to of, I just don't think we get to know him super well. And I don't think, like, he spent so much time being kind of ferreted along the plot mm-hmm. by Dolores. And also, yeah, not having too much agency in season three, I think. He's kind of, like, going on endless fetch quests, it feels like to me, in season three. And so I hope season four will build out this character and help us get to know him a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Bernard and Stubbs. So again, Bernard and Stubbs basically spent virtually the entirety of season three kind of chasing down Dolores's leads, right?
Pretty
and
much.
She brings him back for a purpose, and it's, I guess, to provide some kind of balance. Like, did you have a sense of like why Dolores involved Bernard? Was that super clear to you? I think I missed it on rewatch.
Yeah, what's the actor's name again? Gosh, I love
Jeffrey Wright.
Jeffrey Wright. I think it's because Jeffrey Wright was contractually obligated to be in the new season. Probably. Like, at this point, it may as well be that, like, because he didn't really have much to do this season after being such an integral part of it last time. You know, and he was yet another character who felt like he was on somebody else's quest. And, you know, every time you'd cut away to him, it was just a matter of, all right, at what point is he going to be brought back into the fold of the main story?
Yeah. So at the end of season three, he accidentally frees the man in black, you know, bad move that William says you should have killed me when you had the chance, which is correct. But then Stubbs is injured in that confrontation. He discovers that Dolores has implanted the key to the Valley Beyond and the Sublime inside him, and mm-hmm. that he can use that key to access the Valley Beyond, which he does, but not before sort of talking with the wife, Lauren, who's the wife of Arnold, as you said, whose memories his were based off of. It's a very, very powerful scene, actually, like very well mm-hmm. acted by both of them. But then he kind of uploads himself to the Valley Beyond, and that's that. We see him in the post-credit sequence wake up seemingly years, if not decades later. That's the thing that I'm curious about, is we have seen in past seasons, like, stuff that takes place like tens, if not hundreds of years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I am curious if season four will intersect with it at all. Like, I believe Jeffrey Wright is in season four of Westworld.
Yeah.
So, and he's theoretically been in the Valley Beyond this whole time, because when he wakes up in the hotel room, he's like, I don't think he got up and went somewhere else in the middle of that. So is season four going to take place like 10 years in the future, is my question. Or 20 years in the future.
They've left it, they left that scene open in an interesting way, because, you know, maybe at the time they didn't know, you know, when exactly season four was going to take place. So let's make it look vaguely like, you know, some time has passed. It could be a year. It could be 1,000 years. You know, who's to say some hooligans didn't sneak in the middle of the night and cover him in bird seeds, and it's just been one day. The real question about that
scene. That'd be amazing.
The real question about that scene is Stubbs in the tub.
Yes.
Is Stubbs still in the tub?
Has Stubbs bled out? You know,
we need to know. All us Luke Hemsworth fans deserve answers.
Yes. All five of you.
All five of us. I do think he is the best Hemsworth, just FYI.
Really? What?
In terms of acting ability, yeah.
Wow.
I'm being completely serious.
Tell me more about this. Let's expand on this. Tell me why.
Sure. So he's on this show called Westworld. I don't know if you've seen it.
Why do you think Luke Hemsworth is the best Hemsworth?
Well, I think when you're put in a position where you're not, where you don't have like a Thor or a Hunger Games kind of thing, you do have the ability to do more nuanced things. So maybe it's a matter of circumstance. Maybe I haven't seen enough of the other Hemsworths.
If it was Chris in the show, he would have been able to do a bunch of acting as well. Have you seen Spiderhead? Have you seen Spiderhead?
I have. Yes. No, I think Chris Hemsworth is incredible in that. He is. But I don't know. There's just something about Hemsworth 3 that just really speaks to me on like a really subtle level. And which is not to say that Chris and, gosh, Hunger Games Hemsworth. Liam. Which is not to say that they're bad actors. I think they're both fantastic. Yeah. But I don't know. Gun to my head, it's got to be Luke.
Wow. Okay. Question, is Stubb still alive? I think he's probably still alive. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. And then finally, we already mentioned that Serac is dead. He tried to get access to the Westworld data, which would have helped him to further Rehoboam's causes, which was Rehoboam's purpose was to ensure that humans didn't kill themselves, like didn't annihilate themselves. But he failed, and theoretically he dies at the end of season 3. So let's talk about the one character, you know, we've been talking about like how like everyone hasn't really had an arc this season. Let's talk about the one character that did have an arc, which is Dolores, right? She's the one that's actually driving all the action in season 3. And
which one? Which Dolores are we talking about?
Dolores Prime, you know, the original Dolores.
Okay.
And she uploads herself. She gets herself uploaded to Rehoboam and is able to like delete Rehoboam because like I guess she had Solomon's technology inside her and was then able to like implant it inside Rehoboam, which is then able to delete Rehoboam.
R.I.P.
But she has had a pretty interesting arc if you look at just the bones of it, which is she went from kill all humans to maybe humans deserve to live outside of their constraints. You know, maybe I'm going to lead humans to their freedom. Yes. And I like that overall as an arc. I think, again, it's weighed down by all the stuff that we've already been talking about, but I think it's a solid arc. Any thoughts on Dolores, who theoretically dies at the end of season 3, but they're, who they're going to figure out a way to bring back in season 4?
Sure. I do like the idea that, as you call her Dolores Prime, I do like the idea that her journey has ended. We will see these other versions of Dolores. We will see Evan Rachel Wood back as, you know, some other character. But the one who we have been following, from whom the other copies are made, I like looking at her journey in completion from the beginning of season 1 to discovering all these horrifying truths, to discovering her role in them as kind of, you know, in a way, the original grand design of the Delos Park, in a way. I also like that her name is Dolores and the company is Delos, and I feel like there's some kind of connection there. But that's a story for another time. But yeah, I like all the things that she has gone through and the way that she's responded to them. Even if, you know, I do feel like her change towards the end of season 3 comes a little too quickly and we don't sit with it for long enough. But again, at this point, that's just like, we can assume that's our default criticism for like every character.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you look at, you know, where Dolores has been in totality in the, I guess, the 30 or so years that we've seen her, you know, sometimes we've seen, you know, the past and the present unfolding at the same time through her eyes. And, you know, her discovery of the fact that the world is just so, so messed up that she can experience something like that and she can experience all this cruelty. And then, you know, seeing her become cruel and embody that cruelty and then eventually leave it behind, I think is, it's a good place to end her journey.
Yeah. If that is in fact where it ended.
Oh God.
We'll see if they bring her back. But yeah, I think it's a solid arc for that character. So in terms of the next season, the biggest questions I have are, when does it take place?
Yes.
You know, how are they going to bring Dolores Prime back in the picture if it is her? What is the Man in Black's role? What is Caleb's role? What did Bernard see in the Valley Beyond? if Bernard is even in this season. Those are my big questions. And also, like, the show has tried to tackle these massive issues, you know, free will, determinism, AI controlling humans, like all this stuff. And I'm like, what is the main arc of this season going to be, right? Like, they already tried to resolve the idea of free will in one season. It's already like, it's done. It's Rehoboam is dead, right? So I could see it taking a Matrix Reloaded style path where, they broke out of the system, but they found them. Like, it was actually another system of control, you know, like maybe that way. But anyway, any other thoughts on kind of, as you think about season four, and again, we know very little as we're recording this, anything you're looking forward to or any thoughts you have on it?
I want to see what it's like for these characters to pick up the pieces after, you know, the world has fallen apart or, you know, been burned down in a sense. You know, have they been able to raise the system to the ground and what comes next? Because, you know, the ending with Caleb and Maeve, you know, on that bridge overlooking the destruction, you know, a lot of people have said this. It feels a lot like the ending to Fight Club with, you know,
you met me at a very strange time in my life. Yeah,
exactly. This, you know, system-wide reset. And, you know, while there is a Fight Club 2 comic, it's not one that a lot of people have read, myself included. But the question that I've always had watching Fight Club is, okay, they've done that. What next? And I wonder if, you know, in some sense, that's what we'll get to see. What happens next? You know, are they going to start from scratch? Are some parts of society going to start from scratch? You know, what is the relationship between humanity and AI going to be, you know, presumably all these years later? Is it, you know, what are the alliances? What are the factions? Even just between the characters themselves. Because, you know, that's going to be a big thing to move the plot forward. Who's on whose side and, you know, who's off on which tangent and which subplot. So it's going to be interesting to see what the foundation of this season is.
Agreed. All right. Go ahead.
It's Stubbs in the dub, man. It's Stubbs in the dub.
All right. Well, I think we can wrap it up there. Siddhant Thadlaka, I'm grateful that you have chosen to come on this journey with me through Westworld Season 4. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And we are grateful to all of our listeners for sticking with us. Really appreciate you. But that's going to do it for us today. We will plan to upload new episodes every Monday. Is the current plan maybe Tuesday if we're delayed, but the current plan is to get these up on Monday, our recaps on Monday. So look forward to them on the Decoding Westworld feed at decodingwestworld.com. You can also email us at decodingwestworld@gmail.com. Until next time, we'll see you later.